All right, you guys, we are back for another episode. So today we're going to be talking about vulnerability, what makes a person vulnerable to being trafficked. We're really going to be more specific on the teenage population. But I think when you think about teenagers, they're going to grow up to be adults. So normally when you have a vulnerability, you do have to kind of resolve it or find, you know, kind of you have to grow in that. And so if you're not able to do that, then you're going to be an adult that has that vulnerability, right? So today we are going to be talking about that. And then I just want to quickly say the definition of what vulnerable is. The definition of vulnerable means weak and without protection, with the result that they are easily hurt physically or emotionally. So someone who's susceptible to physical or emotional attack or harm. Yikes, we do not want to be vulnerable, and we don't want children in our country and our culture to be vulnerable. We wanna be able to come alongside people and strengthen them because we don't want them to be physically or emotionally attacked. Okay, so today on the podcast we have someone very special, Adrienne Morris. She is actually the manager of 4Kids Transitional Independent Living Program, which is called TIL 225. Welcome. And basically they are that program is for young people who have aged out of the foster care. In this role, Adrienne oversees the program's case manager and supports and trains the program's residential advisors who live in the home to provide accountability and oversight to the young adults' residents. She also develops relationships with community partners that lead to opportunities for the residents to obtain internships, job opportunities, life skill training, and more. She ensures that program volunteers connect with the young adults and the RAs to meet their needs for help and mentorship. Adrienne frequently touches base with the young adults in the program to encourage them and ensure compliance with program requirements and expectations so that they can graduate from the program as successful, independent adults going on to the real world. So welcome.
Thank you so much for having me.
Yes. So how long have you been doing this?
So I have been at 4Kids almost 10 years in November, but I have been working with our young adults for probably more years than that. That's how I got my first touch with 4Kids is I started mentoring a young lady who was a teenager. And when she aged out, she moved in to live with me until she finished school, because most kids, when they age out, have not finished high school yet. And then once I joined 4Kids in a different role than I'm in now, I started volunteering with the program immediately. That same week that I started at 4Kids, I started volunteering with our young adults. And I've been on this team for about 5 years now.
That's amazing. So you're one of the foundation, you're lifting up this program, basically. No, you've been there.
I get to be witness to what God is doing in this program. It's been amazing.
That's amazing. And do you want to just talk about what the program does and what, just briefly, and then we'll dive into the vulnerabilities.
Surely. So our program, TIL 225, the program, what TIL 225 really stands for is Transitional Independent Living, and the 225 comes from Joel 225, which is the verse that says the Lord will restore the years that the locusts have eaten away. And so the hope and prayer is that during their time with us, that is a time of restoration for them, where sad memories, where angry memories, disappointments are kind of replaced by just God's goodness and what he's doing while they're with us in our home. So till 225, until the Lord restores those years for them.
Amen. And the children are what age when they're in the program?
So they're able to come in with us from 18. Our program is designed to serve young adults who have aged out of foster care. And in the foster care system, when they turn 18, they have to leave from their foster care placement. So what that looks like is on their 18th birthday, they're having to leave whatever placement they're in, whatever their normal is, and move into a home with strangers and that sort of thing, which looks very different than expectations. Because if you've been in foster care for any amount of time, you can't wait until you're 18 and you're grown and you can go do whatever you want to do with your life. Like most 18-year-olds, they think, oh, I'm 18, I'm grown, I can go live life. But the truth of the matter is, because they don't have the life skills that are necessary, they don't have the support, they don't really have the chance to go and just get a place and live. They don't know how to do that. They don't know how to manage a home, manage finances, take care of themselves. A lot of them are coming from group home settings where they're paid staff to like do the laundry, to cook the meals, to clean the building. And so those are skills they don't get to develop because it's all being taken care of for them. So our program looks different in that we have homes, just regular homes, no signage out front. It's not some building. It's a home in a neighborhood. And we bring in young adults, up to four in each home, and they get to live alongside residential advisors. And those residential advisors are actually volunteers who commit to serving in the home for at least a year. And they manage the home, hold those young adults accountable, and just become a responsible, reliable adult in their life. And these young adults, we're not in the habit of just taking care of adults. They have responsibilities. They have to either be working or in school full time. And if they're not doing that, they volunteer until they're doing one of those things. Okay. And there's just a lot of supportive programming that comes around them.
Okay. And what makes a child, because I see the 18-year-old, 17-year-old, you're still growing.
Right.
There's a lot of things there. In the idea of being a foster child, like, what is it that makes them so vulnerable to, why does this program exist, basically? What are we catching? Why are we catching this age group? What makes them vulnerable to the outside world?
Well, so of the kids that are in care, 60% typically age out, meaning that they were never adopted. They didn't get to go back to their families. And so that population of that 60%, typically 50% of them become homeless within the first 18 months after they turn 18. 50%
become homeless. Children in the United States
who age out of foster care become homeless within the first 18 months of like them aging out. And so coming into this program, number one, provides stability, right? That's one of those things that if you don't have stable housing, you become that much more vulnerable, especially to things like being trafficked, because people will promise you things and you're so desperate for it that you don't understand what you're actually walking into or accepting. It's not like everybody's walking into being sex trafficked because they know that's what's going to happen. That's not the case. Even with labor trafficking, you know, there's these lies that they're told about, you know, what they're going to get paid and about the housing that they're going to be provided. And then once they get there, they realize that's not the case. The other part of the population that's being caught is those who typically would end up going into, you know, the justice system in some way. That happens a lot because if you don't have housing and you feel desperate, sometimes you get involved in a life of crime in order to try to meet your immediate needs. And so by providing the things that they're so eagerly searching out, that kind of takes away from that as well. A lot of times kids that are aging out and the teen population in general, if they're not mature and they don't completely understand like life as an adult and what the expectations are for them, it makes them very vulnerable because their behaviors are not acceptable to society and they're treated in ways that, you know, would make them feel less than. A lot of times kids in care, they're treated as a check. You know, they have foster, like all the time you hear kids say, well, my foster parent told me, you know, I'm just a check to them. Right. Wow. And so then they start to attach their value to the amount of money that they can bring in. So those things make them vulnerable to then try to go out and seek and search out ways to make money without really understanding everything that comes with making the money.
Okay. So, this is really a prevention-based program because you're catching a lot of... We already know plenty of the statistics, right? Or some of it in regards to what happens if a child doesn't have that support system in place.
Right.
So going into the vulnerabilities, how does that develop to the point where at 18 they're not ready to take on the real world?
Well, I mean, a lot of it is, it's they're never presented the opportunities to even grow and develop. So if like a vulnerability might be that you don't have stable housing, okay, you become 18 as a foster kid and you're placed, basically what happens is they get three options before them: leave care altogether, have no support. Most of them want to do that because they just want to be adults.
Yeah.
But they do that and they can't find stable housing, or they're sleeping on people's couches, not knowing what's going to happen. It's not safe. Or they're in shelters. I mean, the vulnerabilities that come with living in a shelter. And that's what happens with a lot of them. And then they have the option of, if they want to go like into a program like ours or some type of housing through extended foster care. There's blessings in that some of those vulnerabilities kind of get caught, because then they get assigned life coaches and they continue with someone with like the local arm of DCF for your county, whichever county you're in.
Yeah.
And there are things put in place to try to help prevent that. Right. And then there's those who say, I can live on my own and I want continued service. And that creates a whole different situation, because what it looks like for most of the population is that they will have like housing opportunities for these kids, right? And then you put a whole bunch of traumatized kids who have not experienced healing and who don't have accountability in their life through healthy adult relationships. You put them all in one place. And so you have people there who have been victimized. And so then they become the aggressor and they, you know, create other victims. You have people there who are like bullies in essence. And so they might be stealing the food and everything from like one of the other residents. There is a lot of like sexual aggression that happens in those communities because they have been the victim of those things. And so like we all, you know, you hear the term hurt people hurt people.
Yeah.
Well, one of the big statistics is when somebody's been sexually violated, then they become a sexual violator. You know, and so now you're putting all of them together in like one building or in one community and sending somebody out once a month to make sure, you know, to check in on them. Yeah. And so it just opens up, you know, for so many things to come in, because if you have a need for food and you're doing whatever you can to just eat, right? There's something called time horizon. You don't think very far, like you, me, we may be thinking about retirement and planning for all that. These kids don't think that far because they can't get past their needs for today. So if I'm just thinking about today, I don't care.
They're in survival mode.
They're in survival mode. So then I don't care if what I do today, if breaking into somebody's home and that kind of thing to like meet my needs, I'm not even thinking about, oh, if I have to go to jail for 6 months, because I'm not even seeing 6 months for myself. I'm thinking about this immediate need I have right now.
Yeah.
And when you have all these different vulnerabilities, they open you up to experiencing consequences beyond what you're even considering for yourself, but they're trying to meet immediate needs.
And that even reminds me of that statistic that says your brain doesn't really completely develop until you're 25, which is far away from eight. That's a couple of years out from 18. But with that development, with your brain developing at 25, you realize consequences.
Right.
So without coaches or mentors, and good mentors in your life, you're not able to be guided or directed.
Yeah. And just so you know, that looks really different for kids that have been in care, because the trauma that they experience, and all of the trainings that we've done about trauma-informed care and different things like that, the trauma that they experience causes them to not develop at the same rate. So we just did trainings even just last week with our residential advisors, the people who are living alongside these young adults. And they were astonished to hear that like they're basically half their age. So you have an 18, 19-year-old standing in front of you that you're having this conversation. You're trying to help them understand like a logical thought process about something, but they're really like 8, 9, 10 years old in terms of their development.
Wow.
And trauma changes your brain and how it functions. And especially when we start talking about like those who have been trafficked, right? It physically, like there's so much data, you know, that shows like how it physically changes your brain because of what you've experienced, because of what that trauma has done to you. Certain parts don't, you know, the synapses don't work the same. Certain areas don't get developed the same way. So like fight or flight becomes like the go-to, you know, that's like the main area that's always, you know, processing. and not like the logic and the consideration and thinking things through and understanding consequences. And so it really just puts them in a completely different space than maybe the healthy, you know, 17, 18 year old who grew up in a home. And even if it wasn't with parents, but just like with loving adults, aunts, uncles, family, friends, just where that looks very different than somebody who was in care.
Yeah, because I could totally see how if I'm at a job and you have to keep your composure, right? Mm-hmm. If a customer's yelling at you.
Man.
You know, those early jobs when you're 20s.
Yeah, my residents, so. I could give you bazillions of examples
they have to,
of that going wrong.
Right. Yeah. So it's even like, especially if you're saying that some of them are half their age, emotionally, mentally.
Mm-hmm.
So in that, most people see, you know, or all of us, we look at someone and we're like, okay, I see them and I calculate kind of like how old they are, right? But most people, if you can't, you can't look at someone and know what they've gone through. Unless
creates unrealistic expectations for what your experience with them is going to be.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So to kind of understand more of the vulnerabilities and how it kind of, they form, could you talk a little bit about the types of abuse or experiences that the children in foster care are going through that create these vulnerabilities?
Absolutely. So I think a big one is the stability, right?
Stability.
In terms of housing. So when you, because that one kind of points to so many other things. So one thing that happens is they are not stable for extended periods of time. On your previous, you know, podcast, you spoke with Rebecca and she talked about how the number of moves, like the state of Florida says, okay, if they move 5 times in 1,000 days, like that's okay. But we also know that that's the pipeline to the, you know, justice system, because 5 moves, it's like, the statistic is something like 80-90% of them end up incarcerated if they experience those moves. With those moves comes like instability, different environments. So that looks like now your education is interrupted. If you're moving every year, year and a half to like a different foster home, or sometimes not even a year, if you're in a home for 6 or 7 months, mm-hmm. and in the middle of that school year, you get moved to another home, now your education is disrupted. So most of the kids that are aging out of care, they're 18 years old and they're like juniors in high school because mm-hmm. they've fallen behind. That is one right there. You know what I'm saying? Sometimes they're in homes like prior, like before they come in, right? One of the things is neglect. And that can look like they're not being food in the home consistently. Look like they don't have
that could be starving, right?
Exactly.
So if I do not eat breakfast, just right. breakfast, I'm mm-hmm. like,
and you're talking about the
think.
Only time they eat sometimes is lunch at school. You
wow.
know, maybe they're not getting to school early enough because there isn't a parent that's waking them up that cares about
yeah.
their education. So they're missing the breakfast. They get to school.
Or their parent is
absent.
Drugged up on the couch or they
not
don't have
there.
Sufficient.
We've had residents that came into care because there was no parent. They
yeah.
were found to be living like literally had someone in our home where their parent had an apartment for them. They were there with them. Parent just moved out, left them there. And this kid had the resilience to
wow.
like get up every day, keep going to school and everything, and trying to do what little things they could do around the neighborhood, walking people's dogs to get money, to buy themselves food, living in a place that
wow.
had no water, no lights, you know, and just waiting to be discovered, you know. And in a situation like that, like they're not eating. Forget about medical care. Forget, like, most of them, like, medical care is so disjointed because if you go in, you're with this family and, you know, you have this doctor because that's the one in their community and now you switch to this family and they didn't get the records from another doctor and they don't know that you have, like, an ongoing issue and then you go to this family and next thing you know, it's been a year and a half and you haven't been to the dentist and you have cavities and, you know, like, all of that.
So
all of that comes with it.
Have you noticed a lot in regards to like lack of the because of that something because that's a need, right?
Mm-hmm.
If they have a cavity that's not being met, they might forget themselves, you know. Normally a parent is there like, hey, we need to go check on that,
right.
you know, let me follow up. But have you noticed that being a big issue?
Absolutely. We even have, like, we've had residents who came who maybe they were with somebody who cared enough and they got braces, and then they were with people who didn't care enough, and now it's like all messed up and off, and you know, and that's not to say that the state doesn't care. Like, there are these requirements. They're supposed to be seen by doctors and dentists and specialists for different areas. But when, again, there's all these moves, things happen with the shuffling on the paper. You know what I mean? And you see it with their health. You'll see some that clearly are not getting the nutrition that they need. You can see it physically in their body. Mm-hmm. And then especially you want to start talking about the mental health piece, because the mental health piece is so big. They're overdiagnosed, number one, because people are diagnosing behaviors, not understanding that the behavior is a result of the trauma, and it's not like whatever the root is that you think you're diagnosing them for. But the other part of that is that when they're medicated, right, they don't have the words to really express like how medications make them feel or if something seems off. And again,
you're talking about kids in the foster care system.
Kids in the foster care system.
So this is like 4-year-olds all the way up to 18.
And they don't manage their meds for themselves. So if you have a caregiver or you're living in a place where there's, you know, 45 kids running around, how easily is it for mistakes to be made? They're not able to, even when they become teenagers, they're not allowed to manage their medications. They can't handle it themselves. But what that sets them up for failure in is that, okay, this whole time somebody's been managing it. Today I turn 18 and now I'm expected to manage it on my own. I've never had this responsibility. I don't know what the medication is for. I don't understand the dosing. And that makes them so much more vulnerable.
Yeah.
You know, just not even understanding that. And on top of the things like regular over-the-counter stuff, they don't know how to use properly. And so, like, they have gotten sick taking the wrong medication because this is what they thought they should take. But they don't understand, like, what the medication is for or anything because, you know, the things that we take for granted, those of us who have had an opportunity to live with family, where things aren't taught, but you just see it. So it becomes a part of, like, the information you absorb, right? So you're sick. Somebody takes you into the bathroom, they pick up a bottle, they start reading labels, explain to you that this is what this is for. Okay, we're going to take this. Yeah. Nobody taught you that. It just was an experience that you had multiple times in life. And so then you understand, like, let me go. Or they take you with them into the pharmacy and they talk to the pharmacist and ask some questions. So then, you know, I can go into a pharmacist and ask questions. They don't have
that. My mom and my dad used to give me Gatorade when I was sick. Mm-hmm. So I would always think
to make
that
sure you're not dehydrated.
Yeah, I thought Gatorade was like a medicine growing up. So I would always associate it with like, oh, I take that when I'm sick.
Right.
But that's still one of those things that, because you see it, and that was like when I was four. So when I would see it, it's something you absorb. So that's insane how even in medication, it's so significant, especially because you mentioned that these children are being diagnosed because of the trauma.
Behaviors, not the trauma. They're being diagnosed based on the behaviors. If they're disruptive, if they're acting out, you know, things like that. They diagnose them based on the behaviors, but there's trauma at the root where healing can be experienced, and then they wouldn't have the behaviors. It's not necessarily a sickness.
So what is the common diagnosis for children?
ADHD, like... It seems like all of them, you know,
ADHD,
like not all, but I mean, honestly, huge majority ADHD, they're diagnosed with like attachment disorders and things like that. Like that is probably one of the more realistic diagnoses that they receive just because of the type, you know, how they come up, whatever their home environment has looked like. There's a lot of
So you feel like that adds like a label to them and it changes the way people interact with them.
Yeah. I think the most unfortunate label is being a foster kid, though.
Yeah.
People have made up in their minds what they think foster kids are. And what a foster kid is like your child being removed because you weren't able to do what the state expects you to do as a parent. That child has done nothing. Yet that child experiences, you know, all the stigmas that people create in their mind. Mm-hmm. And then they have to live a life under these labels that people have put on them. And it limits the opportunities that they have. It limits people's understanding for them. In schools, even, you know, you find that they get treated differently by the teachers. because they're a foster kid. You know, now there are a lot of educators who really have a heart and have a true understanding, but just like in all of the population, right, there's always a percentage of those, no matter what circle of people you put together, there's going to be a percentage that, you know, are just ridiculous for no reason. And so there is that percentage of teachers, right? And so they will treat them less than, they will make them feel small.
So most from my understanding of what you're saying, teachers do know who's a foster child, like in the classroom. Is that because it's like mandated by the state?
All right, so we're gonna end the episode right there. I hope you're having an amazing, you know, I hope you enjoyed that and learned a lot, or learned maybe a different side of the foster care system that you might have not thought of before. I know I learned plenty, and I know I still have a lot to learn. So join me next time as we listen to part two. And don't be shy. Share this with a friend. Leave a comment. Subscribe. Definitely let me know your thoughts. Rate this podcast. It helps with getting just more exposure out there. And if you appreciate this, also check out 4Kids. They're doing an amazing work in Broward County, and I know they've spread out to other areas in Florida. So it's just amazing, their heart behind the mission and their vision in really supporting families that foster and also supporting the children themselves. It's all about the kids and making sure that they're doing all they can to meet these children's needs. So I appreciate you for listening, and definitely follow us on Instagram. It is Gal Restore, and that is all. So there you go. Just holler at me over there. I'm waiting, and maybe, you know, we'll meet in person one day, grab some chai tea or something. But yeah, let me know what your thoughts are. Definitely love feedback, and who maybe someone that you might like to see interviewed on the podcast. Just, you know, find a way to let me know. I would love it and appreciate it. All right. Until next time, my friend. Bye.